Giving us all of the details on something else, though, is Mike Miller, Associate Professor of Economics at DePaul University. Welcome back, Professor Miller. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, I always enjoy your conversation and insight. I think we have sort of talked in the past about the impact that expectation of certain economic events actually has on those economic events. You're talking about inflation today. What's the story here?
You know, some research has been done to try to figure out if the press has anything to do with it. And so we know that one of the primary forecasting tools we have to determine whether inflation is going to occur are the expectations of inflation by both forecasters, professionals in the field, as well as households. Because what will happen is if you expect inflation, you will behave as though there is inflation. And, of course, that will add to the inflation. You'll ask for larger wages. You'll be more willing to accept increases in prices. And firms are going to be more willing to raise prices, knowing that you may simply shrug it off and say, well, I guess prices are going up. So what some researchers did in San Francisco is ask the question, could it be that the constant drumbeat that inflation is so bad, could that be adding to the household's expectations? Because we're finding that households are actually expecting much more than normal in terms of inflation compared to the forecasters. And they're convinced, based upon the way they set up their model and looked at the data on the press in general, the business press, that the constant drumbeat that inflation is a problem, a worsening problem, a bad problem, has made people expect more and therefore behave in a way that will create more. It's almost like the old expression of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. Although, it does seem like those dots are adjacent to each other, but one wonders if, in fact, you can make that connection. But before we even try and do that, just go back and restate that point. You said that people are acting in a manner that is consistent with higher inflation, right? Regardless of the level of inflation, they're already aren't you saying that they're accepting it? They're acting as though inflation wasn't such a great impediment. You would think inflation would cause people to buy less. Aren't we buying less, Mike?
Yes. Well, we're not. And we actually adjusted for, you saw that retail sales this week was reported to be up considerably. That was, however, not adjusted for inflation. But even when you adjust those numbers for inflation, we see that sales are, in fact, up. My point was that, let's say you go into the store and you see that the price of the something that you wanted, chicken or whatever, is up, and it's up a lot. If you didn't have an expectation of inflation, what you might automatically do is walk over and see what has happened to the price of beef. You would look for a substitute. But if in your mind you have the expectation that prices, inflation in general, is higher, you won't even bother making that substitution. You'll simply, in a sense, accept it, which makes it easier for that price, to a sense, to become ingrained in the economy.
I understand but isn't there a fundamental cost for raising a chicken? Maybe, in fact, the chicken processors and farmers, in fact, did have higher expenses, and that is a true cost of the chicken.
Oh, absolutely the case. There's no doubt that the cost of bringing it to market in terms of, actually, my household, we actually have some chickens, and chicken feed has gone up considerably to try to feed those animals and get the eggs and so forth. The price has gone up, and that would, if we were to sell those eggs, we would have to pass that price on to the person who would be buying them.
Right.
So there's the inflation is real. And the only problem with the research is, you can't say just because the two things went up at the same time that there's necessarily causation. It could be just simple correlation that the press is reporting.
It's a chicken or the egg. You get it? Chicken price?
But, yeah, but, but that, but,
My criticism of the media on a lot of fronts, Professor, has been that it is hyperbolic. Look how Fox, after the election, quit talking about crime. The violent crime videos and suggestions after the election suddenly dropped off. I think the media does latch on to storylines. Gas prices were another good example this year.
Yes.
And you wondered if it was a push or a pull. But I want to ask you a little bit more about that in just a minute. And I know I'm sounding very defensive because I'm a member of the media here, but I'm truly just trying to understand it. Mike Miller is a professor of economics at DePaul University, and we're talking a little bit about inflation. He said the expectation of inflation when you go to the store makes you more willing to accept prices. So when the chicken is surprisingly expensive, but you already know that it's going to be expensive, you go ahead and buy the chicken. Maybe you would not have otherwise. And he said that there's a study out now that says that the media has hit the drum so loud and long that it's sort of made us expect high prices. We don't change our behavior because we already see it coming and we buy the chicken anyway. Before we go to the media's connection to that, is that a bad thing or a good thing, Mike, that in fact people do buy the chicken?
You have to understand if they're willing to pay that higher price and they don't have the higher income, it's going to cost them somewhere else. They'll not have the income left maybe to buy the dessert that they wanted, so that part of the market would be affected. Because what households do when they see prices of items going up or down, things that they want, they substitute. They would move from chicken, say, to beef if beef was relatively less expensive. But what we see now is that the price of pretty much everything is going up. And one of the issues, of course, is the press has got to report what's happening. They should not hide the fact that there's inflation. But what you can do, of course, is highlight things that make the inflation appear to be worse than it really is. Just like the focus upon year over year as opposed to, prices go up from a month-to-month basis. And what we're seeing is that if you would annualize the month-to-month change, inflation is beginning to fall, just like many predicted it would. But what you do is you focus upon the year-over-year, and the number sounds very high. And what gets into people's brain then is that very high number that the press is focusing upon. Or they'll focus upon one item that has gone up dramatically, as opposed to, we were just talking about Hagerty and the cars. We are seeing the car prices and apartment rents and so forth are beginning to soften, which why would that not be highlighted? And maybe people's expectations then would be slightly reduced.
Well,
it would be harder for prices to go up.
It's a good question, and I'm not saying that this is the right answer, but the answer is that if we don't do that, then we're seem to be advocating and say, hey, but not so bad, and that's not our place to be. We give you the facts, you figure it out. So if, in fact, it's going down, but hey, guess what? Inflation is still 7%, which is better than 8%, but it's still 7%, then that's the end of our obligation. We're not cheerleaders.
I hear you. Absolutely the case. And so that's the one thing about business, about reporting. People have become suspect of the press, no matter which side you are on, that somehow it's being slanted. And I think what these researchers are just picking up is simply the amount of focus upon inflation. That inflation was not an issue pretty much between 1985 and a couple of years ago. Inflation was not a major player in the American economy until just recently.
Because it was
and
so low.
The press is really playing it up.
Well, because it was so low. It wasn't a player because it was low, right?
Absolutely.
Was appropriate coverage. But you didn't see them saying, hey, inflation is up 1.2%. Maybe they did, but it didn't dominate the news coverage because
exactly
it was acceptable. So this is the exception to the recent rule. It is appropriate to tell people that inflation is high right now.
Yes, it is absolutely the case. But in some sense, do you purposely, I'm not sure, it certainly gets people to listen if you make a dramatic case that the price of something is up substantially compared to what it was before. you have to understand that the CPI is based upon a whole basket of goods, and there are some in that basket which will go dramatically up, and some that will fall. You never hear about, you know, the decline in the price of electronics and so forth. They don't ever seem to focus upon that, where you would say, oh, maybe inflation is not, you know, in the future going to be quite as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because it is a bit of a conundrum for the consumers and the broadcasters. And, you know, my bugaboo about this for a long time has been the way we report crime in Chicago. It's terrible. But in fact, the 30-year trend in Illinois is radically down. Chicago is not the most violent city in America. It's not even per capita the most violent city in Illinois. And just one of the last point about that. So when 50 or 20 or two people get shot in Chicago over a weekend, and a million people were downtown at a convention or at the parade, we never say 998,994 people had a great, safe weekend in Chicago. Six people got shot. We talk about the six. And we have to talk about the six, but it's context, and it's very difficult, but nobody does that. Nobody says a million people had a great, happy weekend in Chicago, and they spent dollars there. And I'm waiting for somebody to take the lead on that. And the challenge, I'm almost done, Mike. I'm sorry I'm taking so much of your time.
No, it's a very interesting discussion.
Well, the challenge is to not seem like you're ignoring it, or you're advocating for people to do something that may or may not be in their best interest. That's the problem.
I fully agree. And, you know, one thing is, I do an exercise with my MBAs, and I ask them, what do you think is the truth? And then I make them look up the data, and they find out what the truth is. Just for example, what percentage of American workers are farmers? And the average answer I get from my MBA students is somewhere around 10%. And the number is actually 1.6. People have conceptions of things which are simply wrong. And that's why you have to, in a sense, focus upon the data. So that's why I'm so data-driven. I want to make sure I have the numbers. Just like with crime, there is no doubt that crime overall has declined dramatically over the past 30 years. And if you have an uptick, it is from a very low level. You're exactly right.
I'm going to take one of your classes one of these days, and you're going to regret the day I walk in. I'll be asking questions every 10 seconds.
I enjoyed it. I was lucky enough. I was in October. I was over in Bahrain teaching on our MBA program. I had a very engaged group of students. The number of questions was exceptional. We just had a wonderful discussion about their economy, the American economy, the Fed. And that makes a classroom just come alive.
Michael Miller at DePaul. We'll call you again, Mike. Thanks for your time again.
It's been my pleasure, John. You take care.
Emily Johnson joins us right now. She's the president of the Chicago-based Taylor Johnson Public Relations Firm. And speaking of the holidays, she's collecting peanut butter because that's a very desirable item for food pantries, especially this time of year. Hi, Emily. You're on WGN.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and we're happy to put you on. But tell me about your firm. You guys focus on real estate, is that right?
Yes, we do. So all of our clients are real estate companies, and that's been our niche for the past 45 years. So we work with developers and architects and property management companies and the like in all the different sectors. So residential, commercial, retail, industrial, and so on.
How do they come to you? I mean, what service do you provide for them? You help them with their display ads or their websites?
We focus on public relations. So mostly we're doing media relations with them. So we're helping them with their messaging and then connecting them to the media that can help get that message out there. And we also do events and social media.
And what's the biggest challenge right now on the real estate side for somebody in the PR side?
Well, I think it's just working with those companies, as with any company or any PR firm, it's working with those companies to figure out what their messaging is and then figuring out who their audience is and how to get it out there. Yeah. But real estate right now, as you know, is going through a challenging time because of interest rates that are increasing. Property taxes are increasing. So there are some headwinds out there that they're dealing with, but even during challenging times, you know, there's still public relations to do, and you still want to get your story out there and make sure that your brand is being heard.
Yeah, maybe more so now than ever. I mean, maybe the message or the work that you do for your clients is more critical now than ever. It's easy to come up with good ideas when times are flush, but where the rates are high and everybody's pinched. The messaging.
It's interesting because during downturns or slow times, some of our clients do decrease their PR budgets, but they rarely eliminate them altogether because they understand the power of PR. But other companies look at it as an opportunity to increase market share and increase brand awareness so that they come out the other side in a stronger position. I was just having that conversation with an architecture firm earlier this week that's looking to increase its PR. So it just depends on the company, whether they're more risk averse or whether they're more opportunistic. And a lot of real estate companies tend to be more opportunistic in nature. So, you know, you just kind of navigate your way through that.
Emily Johnson's on the line, president of the Chicago-based Taylor Johnson public relations firm, taylorjohnson.com is her website. Tell me about your peanut butter drive.
Yeah, so believe it or not, I got the idea from listening to your show. So you had a representative from the Greater Chicago Food Depository on who was talking about the best foods to donate to food banks. And she said that peanut butter tops that list. And when I was listening to that, I thought, wow, my ears really perked up because I thought, wow, I love peanut butter. I eat it every day. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to do a food drive that was solely based on peanut butter? So that's what we're doing. We're doing a peanut butter drive, and we're calling it PB&TJ, and it's tied to our 45th anniversary in business. And our original goal was to collect 450 jars of peanut butter. And as of yesterday, we have already collected 1,279 jars of peanut butter. So it's been it's been a lot of fun. And to date, we've just been promoting it through the real estate industry, since that's the industry that we serve through our PR services. But being on your show today is super exciting for us because it's such a broader audience. And we're excited for the jars of peanut butter to hopefully come rolling in.
Do you have possession of 1,000 peanut butter jars?
Yes, they are piled high in our office. And my team has been so awesome because they just keep coming in. The shipments keep coming in. And a lot of people are not just donating jars of peanut butter. They're donating cases.
Wow.
So we unpack them and we stock them up. And you can see pictures of it on our Instagram at Taylor Johnson PR. And it's just been really fun. And people have engaged with it in such a great way. And we're just so grateful for all the donations. And you can go to our website, taylorjohnson.com/PB&TJ, and that's where you'll find a link to Amazon, and then you'll find different purchasing options there. So like I mentioned before, you can purchase a jar of peanut butter, you can purchase a case of peanut butter. Some people have even donated multiple cases.
Right.
And when you go to select when you go to checkout, you just want to make sure to select Taylor Johnson's address so that it's sent to us. So that we're the recipient.
Emily, you want us to do it this way rather than throw them in the trunk and drive them over, right?
Yeah, some people have done that, but the most efficient, easiest way is just to use the Amazon link. And it goes right to your Amazon account. It's super easy.
Okay, so taylorjohnson.com. Taylorjohnson.com is your website. And the hyperlink would be taylorjohnson.com/ what again?
PB as in peanut butter and TJ. So PB and TJ.
Do I spell it AND or do I use the ampersand?
AND.
PB AND T. No. Do it again.
PB AND TJ. PB and TJ. So it's like peanut butter and Taylor Johnson.
Well, when we did our peanut butter and Jolly Drive that you heard about years ago, our studio's filled up with peanut butter, and I'm glad you're doing it this year rather than us, because it was hard to get around. And congratulations on a great start. We'll send people to your site and fill it up, okay?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. And if there's any companies out there that are listening today that want to engage in a big way, we would love to find some matching opportunities. So if that's the case, feel free to reach out to me through our website, and we can take the conversation from there.
That's Emily Johnson, Chicago-based Taylor Johnson Public Relations. Good job, Emily. We'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. If trends continue, State Farm could soon see record auto insurance losses. The Bloomington-based insurer saw $8.6 billion in underwriting losses through the first 9 months of this year, according to Cranes. State Farm's auto unit posted a $5 billion loss during the period. The company leads the pack among the big insurance companies with losses. Northbrook-based Allstate saw more than $2 billion in underwriting losses. Geico reported $1.4 billion in losses. Progressive reported $389 million in profit. The losses at State Farm and Allstate come even as the companies raised rates. Allstate raised rates by more than 8% during the period. State Farm also raised rates, but its auto unit had $124 billion of surplus on hand as of September. Naperville's Springbrook Prairie Pavilion is up for sale. New York investment firm Blackstone has put the shopping center on the market less than a year after buying it. The shopping center includes 278,000 square feet at 2503 Fort Hill Drive. Its tenants include Whole Foods, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Nordstrom Rack. There's also a Home Goods, DSW, and Old Navy store. Blackstone paid $103 million for the property last December. The location and number of popular tenants are selling points. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, and old turkeys are on the menu today. After I tell you, we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, if you've got one of those big freezers, you know, the chest kind where things get piled on top of each other, often for months and years at a time, and if you're doing an archaeological dig to the bottom and you find a frozen turkey from maybe 1, 2, 5 years ago, is it safe to cook? Well, let's go to the meat and poultry experts who our federal tax dollars pay for, the people at the Meat and Poultry Hotline, including Meredith Carruthers, a food safety expert. What do you say, Meredith?
It's definitely safe to have a turkey in the freezer because foodborne illness bacteria don't grow. So no matter how long something is frozen, it will remain safe.
However, there is a but in there.
The only thing that changes is the quality might diminish the longer that it's frozen.
The Meat and Poultry Hotline gets calls about old frozen turkeys. The number, by the way, is 888-MP-HOTLINE. And one call was about a turkey that had been buried in a freezer for 5 years. Would that still be safe?
We told them as long as you haven't had any major power outages and it's been frozen that entire time, it is, in fact, safe to use.
I wonder if that person cooked and ate that five-year-old turkey.
Yes, they called us back and told us that it was super delicious, which is incredible considering sometimes the quality is what's going to diminish the longer that something is frozen.
By the way, you know that built-in timer that pops up when the turkey's done? Is that reliable? Maybe not.
They're only taking the temperature in one portion of the turkey.
165 is the reading you want on your meat thermometer.
And we really recommend to check the temperature in three places: the thickest part of the breast, the innermost part of the wing, and the innermost part of the thigh.
Okay, all your meat preparation questions can be answered at 888-MP-HOTLINE, 888-MP-HOTLINE, or online at ask.usa.gov. And they'll even be there Thanksgiving Day, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Chicago time. From the farm to your belly, today's National Apple Cider Day. It's also National Vichyssoise Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Chris Kendall markets are up and running in Chicagoland. Maren Beester Priebe is on a phone line, the CEO and general manager of the German American Events. ChrisKendallMarket.com is the website. Guten Tag, or whatever it is you said. Hi, Maren.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Let's remind people, you all are running the ones downtown Chicago, over by Wrigley Field as well. And there's a third location too, right?
Yes, this year, we're also in Aurora.
Which is a new location for you this year, is it not?
Yes, it is. We're back in the burbs, and it's our first year out here, and we actually just opened a couple of hours ago.
Is that true for all of the locations?
Yes, they're all open today. So today's the first day officially for all of our market locations.
The one at Daly Plaza is maybe the best known and most famous. It's been a tradition for people to go there, shop, take in the food and the hot spiced wine and the souvenir mugs. Do we have the mugs again this year, the boots?
We do not have a boot this year, but we do have our annual mug. And this year, our mug actually is also in line with the city's Year of Dance. So we kind of joined in there and are also celebrating dance through our mug and have all three locations on a single mug with different landmarks showing on them.
It's great. I just love it. Brenda and I have done it many years. And we, in fact, we did the one by Wrigley Field as well as the one downtown. And it seemed like you had the same merchandise or very similar. Is it the same stuff at all three locations?
So we have a lot of similarities in our vendors because they have been able to be at all locations. And then we do have unique vendors at each individual location as well that do not share more than one location.
I see. So maybe if you've been to one, you might go to another if you're out Aurora way or coming downtown.
I definitely recommend it. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So what are the hours? I mean, if I'm coming into the city or out to the burbs, where do I go? Or rather, what time anyway?
I would recommend visiting ChristendomMarket.com and checking out all of our locations. We do have different hours. Mainly in Chicago and Aurora, we do open at 11 a.m., different times out at Wrigley. And we do close on different days at different times. But Aurora is the only market that's not open daily. That's open Thursdays through Sundays.
And Chris Kindl Market, ChristKindl Market. I say Chris Kringle sometimes. That's wrong, isn't it?
Always say it's not incorrect. Depending, because it's such an American tradition to say Kris Kringle, we're okay with it. It is Kris Kindl. It's the namesake Kris Kind for our gift giver instead of Santa Claus. And she actually comes to the markets as well. And you can find that information on our event page.
And they go well into the evening, which is nice. 8, 9, even 10 o'clock, depending on the location and the day of the week. So
yes.
Don't think that you can't come into town or head out to Aurora and enjoy it at night, too. They're at Gallagher Way, which is adjacent to Wrigley Field, of course, downtown at the Daly Plaza. Where are you in Aurora?
We are at River Edge Park.
Okay.
Right on the river across from the casino.
Any
and
special...
By the Metra.
No, that's good to know. One last thing. Any special items that are new this year or that you'd like to highlight when we're shopping?
I would definitely say we have a new bakery. Sadly, we all lost Dinkle's Bakery this year. We have replaced it with La Boulangerie. It's a French bakery. Very delicious. And I know they have popular European baked goods and Streuselkuchen and definitely good treats there. So even though we did lose Dinkles, we try to replace it. Let's hope that becomes a tradition in Chicago as well.
Marin is the CEO and general manager of the German-American events, ChristKindlMarket.com. Marin, I'm really looking forward to going downtown. I'll probably be at the one at the Daly Plaza real soon. So good luck, and I wish us all good weather for the season.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you and everyone else. Happy holidays, everyone.